Okay.
Right?
Yeah. It's a bit too much to call them films. They're some interviews slapped together with some images in a... Sorry?
Oh, yeah. Excuse me.
What is it? There is a translator.
في حد عايز ترجمة من عربي من إنجليزي العربي يرفع إيده. ما فيش. Okay.
No need.
No need.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Well. Okay, well, first of all, so I was saying that what I'm going to be showing, they're just two clips of people I interviewed, and I just put some images to sort of make it look like something. But it was more out of the idea that I wanted all of you to get some first-hand sense of what people were saying about it, because a lot of the time it was really the emotion on people's faces that told a lot of the story. So as Gabrielle said, and the other thing is that most of the things I had to say, somebody else has said them at some point. So I'm going to get a bit off my script. But Gabrielle said earlier about how in 1959, Guinea was the first country to sign a collaboration program with the Soviet Union. And so the very early filmmakers that went to the Soviet Union were not just directors, they were practically in every single sector of the film industry. And as I started trying to find people, very quickly there was one question that I couldn't let go of, which was, how come a country that started so early and had such commitment to making cinema and the arts in general a central part of the way going forward, how come it has so little to show for it? And so just to start with an anecdote, the head of the cinema in Guinea today, which is called the ONASIG, is a young lady called Maryam Kamara. And when I arrived telling her that I would like to do something about Costa Dian, she was really excited because she was in the middle. She said she had spent the past 2 years trying to buy a copy of his film from the Vgeek, and she had finally managed, but unfortunately it was too expensive for their budget, so they can't acquire it. Well, you're going to see it tonight, not thanks to them, but thanks to Russia and Koyo and Gabrielle and this program. It's really sad because they literally do not have a single one of the films. And all the filmmakers practically don't have their own films themselves. And the clip I'm going to show starts with just a little bit of one of the only copies of anything I found in Guinea, which was a VHS, a very tired VHS copy, which I included anyway. And actually, I came back from Guinea with a long list of names of labs and names of places where people had edited, and now they want me to go look for their films, which I'll try to do. Okay. So to get back to how come did this country that had such commitment to the arts sector, what happened? I think the story of Costa Dian and the two others, which is the second clip, Khalifa Conde and Dawuda Keita, in many ways is an embodiment of the story of Guinea. So that's what I'll be trying to demonstrate. When the president of the first president of Guinea, Ahmed Sékou Touré, came to power. He was a trade unionist, and he was very firmly supported by all the allies who were Pan-Africanists. So like Kwame Nkrumah, and all the sort of Nasser, all the Pan-Africanists that had fought against colonialism. What happened very early on in Sékou Touré's reign, he came to power in 1958, and in 1959, there was an attempted coup d'etat against him that was supported by the French. So very quickly and slowly at the beginning, but it took on a much faster pace, paranoia set in. Sékou Touré was one of these figures who was committed to both Pan-Africanism and to non-alignment. So the idea, I think I'd like to debunk some of the things that the ideas and the arguments that have been said just in the case of Guinea, because I think, as we have seen, each case is quite distinct. Sékou Touré ascended to power by a popular vote against the French staying. So it was a referendum where the people of Guinea voted no. And when he did this, or when Guinea did this, as Charles de Gaulle was leaving, he apparently, that's a sentence every single Guinean repeated to me, he told the Guineans, well, fine, you'll get your independence, but now you're going to have to pay the price for it. And what happened is that when the French left, they literally took away, within 3 days, they took away absolutely every single shred of everything they had done there. And someone told me that even the birth certificates, the plans for the electricity grids, the street signs, everything was loaded and taken off. So when he starts his reign, he's already in a situation where all the talk he had talked previously, there were very little means. He had little means, and he felt embattled. And so when, in 1959, there was an attempted coup d'etat, he started feeling besieged. However, he was supported by the rising star of Africa at the time, who was Kwame Nkrumah. And very early on, he was also very supported by Senghor and Houphouet Boigny from Ivory Coast, with whom he fell out very quickly. Okay, when, as a trade unionist, he himself realized very quickly that the media and the power of the arts is not just about the arts, it's about the transmission of an ideology, the transmission of how you would like to go the way forward. And so one of the very first things that happened is that the Ballets Africains, which was the very first international African music group, which was created by someone called Fodeba Keita, it was one of the big attractions in Paris. And as a declaration of support, they transformed the Ballets Africains to the Ballets Africains de Guinée. So that was a massive boost for Guinea to have the biggest African ballet, dance, choreography group that was very well known in France at the time. Now, Fodeba Keita, who was the head of this group, was then appointed Minister of Interior and Minister of Culture, which I think says a lot, interior and culture at the same time. I don't know of any other country that had that. And for Diba Keita, when he was in Paris, of course, all this was happening in Paris, he was very, most of the young Guineans who lived in Paris at the time were part of this Ballet Africain, or they were friends of it. So Costa Diane, who was very close to Fodiba Keita, other people like Louis Aquin, who had done the IDEC in France, and the others were part of the Ballet Africain. And when he became Minister of Culture, there was obviously a lot of space for him to interact with them and see what it is they wanted to do. So the very first premises of how the cultural policy of Guinea going forward was going to be, you know, put in place was done by an artist who was a practicing artist himself and was very connected to cinema. Okay, and the second idea I wanted to debunk a bit was about the turn to Moscow. One of the surprises I had, because very quite early on, obviously, Sékou Touré had turned to the Soviet Union, but because he was a very committed member of the non-aligned movement, he made a point of diversifying. So the scholarships that were being given to Guinea, he made a point of them going to both the West and to the East. So it's a very bad picture, but that's, they called him Marlon. I eventually realized that it was just his nickname because he always acted like Marlon Brando. But Marlon then was the very first one to go off on a scholarship, and he went to UCLA. And he's still there, by the way. And so you had the very first two people going off on scholarship went to the US, and then you had a couple who went to West Germany, and then the whole group of people started going to the Eastern countries, Poland, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia. And in general, the technical side would go more to the West, and the more the humanities would go to the East. So, for example, in the cinema sector, there was one person whose name was Mustafa Ba, who studied to be a photo. Chemist, a photochemist, developing and all the photochimist. Voilà. He was also sent to the West. I'm going to start with the next clip. I would like to underline that some of the footage that I used in the clip is from David Ashkar's film. David Ashkar, who was a friend, and his father, who was the ambassador, the Guinean ambassador to the United Nations, started off as a film director. But instead of continuing that path, he became an ambassador, and he himself was killed in Camboiro. So, and the beginning, I forgot to put the names of the people who are talking, so I'll tell you later. Okay, there we go. Donc, voilà. Ce qui est très intéressant dans le cas de... Pardon? Oh, okay, sorry. Well, at least I didn't do it in Arabic. What's really interesting in the case of Kostya Dyan is that other than the two films you're going to see tonight, there really isn't much there. He didn't do anything. He did not direct another film. And there is apparently one script that is written that seems to be... with someone in the US, but he's been elevated inside Guinea to a stature way above most of his other colleagues, and he's regarded as being this amazing director when no one has actually seen the films. I think tonight we're going to be amongst the first public to ever see these films. So I think the fact that he was a survivor of Camp Boireau was very important, and he was one of the only survivors of Camp Boireau who later, because he comes out in 1976, I think, or 77, and in 1984, when Sékou Touré dies, and the what they call the democratic regime takes power, all the previous members of the cinema who were at Camp Boireau then become the directors of the ONACIG, the national institution. So Kostya Dyan, with very poor eyesight and very poor health, was the director of Guinean cinema from 1991 until 1993, followed by Moussa Diakaté, who was speaking to us, and the head of... So all the people you saw who had all been in Camp Boireau then became the directors of the cinema starting from the mid-80s on. And so I think Kostya Dyan's experience and the fact that he survived Camp Boireau made him more of a symbol. And... the second generation, so now we move on to the next, let's say the third generation, because there were a few people here and there in between, but by the 1980s, Khalifa Condé and Daouda Keïta go to the Soviet Union, and what is interesting is that by this time, because Sékou Touré was so suspicious, he would only recruit, I think earlier there was a question about how were people recruited to go. In the 60s, there were not that many graduates of school, so in Guinea, those who were sent on scholarship were those who had their baccalaureate. But later on in the mid 70s or late 70s, it was mainly people whose loyalties could be counted on, if you want. So a lot of journalists, a lot of practicing journalists, would go. Okay, we'll watch the second one and then move on. Khalifa Condé and Daouda Keïta did end up making short documentary films of 6 to 12 minutes, and all of them, they didn't have copies, and it was basically part of the... they belonged to the... to the state, and the state no longer has them. So I think, it's quite a sad situation. Voilà.
Non, vas-y.